Hello, and welcome to the History of Canada. I'm your host, Nicholas Kadiva. Chapter 5, Norse Explorers from Eric the Red to Leif Erikson. Last time, we looked at the Canadian landscape in the years leading up to first European contact. We examined the traditions of prominent tribal groups and how daily lives, customs, religion, and technology differed between each region. Today, we have reached the year 1000 AD, when Viking society loomed at its zenith. The Norse were extracting Danegeld from the English, raiding the coasts with their longships, and striking fear into the bravest bastions of Christendom and the Caliphates. The Vikings had expanded north throughout the present Nordics, south into England, Ireland, and all the way from Spain to Sicily, and east into the heartland of the Rus and Anatolia. But to the west, they were bounded by a formidable body of water. Soon enough, though, the hardy Viking adventurers would conquer even these turbulent boundaries. Nearly a millennium has passed since Leif Erikson set out on his voyage to explore North America, a land then thought to be no more than an uncharted wilderness across the waters. Filled with the same spirit of discovery that characterized the travels of his father, Eric the Red, who sailed from Norway to Iceland to Greenland, the journey of Leif Erikson remains one of history's greatest legends. Leaving behind the ice-covered mountains of Greenland, Erikson helped to set the stage for centuries of transatlantic exchange between his father's native Norway and the people of the New World. Bill Clinton, Leif Erikson Day, 1994. Once in Yaren, Norway, lived a man named Eric the Red, son of Thorvald. As a Norse, his name followed the tradition of sobriquets based on features, a practice that has passed into modern lore with the likes of Gandalf the Grey. And Eric bore the sobriquet the Red, probably for his red hair and his beard. But the name would equally have suited his quick temper and his penchant for blood. Eric first enters our story after he and his father Thorvald committed murder, and for this, they were exiled from Norway. So they moved to Iceland, and once in Iceland, through marriage to Thjodhild, a wealthy farmer's daughter, Eric gained land on the west coast and built a house. This house, or what many believe to be his house, has actually been excavated and can be seen today, but the house looks quite modest. However, Eric did not take up a peaceful life in his little house. You see, though Eric was not rich, he did own slaves. And in pre-Christian Norse culture, sadly, slaves, known as thralls, were seen in line with animals and treated quite poorly. At one point, one of his thralls started a landslide onto a neighboring farm. We don't know how the landslide began, but the chronicles don't suggest any malice on the part of the thrall. I mean, it is hard to plan a landslide. Still, this caused the neighbor's friend to become quite upset, and he killed the thrall. Now, it was Eric's turn for anger, and he began a severe quarrel with the man who killed the thrall. This quarrel soon turned violent, and Eric killed both the man and his companion. Once again, Eric showed up in court, and once again, he got another exile. For these murders, Eric was banished from his current settlement in southern Iceland and ordered to leave Iceland for 3 years within 3 years. I mean, you can do whatever you like during those 3 years. I know packing can be quite time-consuming, but after 3 years, man, you gotta go. For 3 years. Now, though he could stay in Iceland for 3 years, he did have to leave his present house. So he decided to take the day's journey to a small Icelandic island known as Eiksni. But the man did not have a peaceful bone in his body. He does little to dispel the violent Viking warrior stereotype. Here, yet again, Eric got into a spat. Eric had entrusted some precious jewels to a neighbor named Thorgest, a neighbor who took a strong liking to the jewels and did not want to return them. So, Eric decided to steal them back. They were his anyway. When he did, though, Thorgest got pretty mad and chased him in full pursuit. In the ensuing skirmishes, Eric killed two of Thorgest's sons, and some unnamed other men. We don't know who these men are, but if you're taking a tally, that's a total of at least 5 kills, plus some unknowns. This time, Eric got a full-scale banishment. This was slightly harsher than the last banishment. The banishment still only lasted for 3 years, but it wasn't a leave Iceland in 3 years once you've had ample time to pack your bags. This was a leave Iceland immediately, because as long as you're here, anyone can kill you without consequence. And Thorgest and company intended to do just that. Immediately, they began scouring the countryside in pursuit of him. So, fearing for his own life, Eric packed up his bags and sailed west. Now, Eric was an excellent mariner, and skilled at planning and administrating, and he did not sail into the west blindly. He knew of the legend of Gunnbjorn, who, when blown off course en route to Iceland, was driven west, where he saw what seemed like a large stretch of land. In reality, Gunnbjorn probably just saw a mirage, but the idea of a western land loomed large in Eric's mind. So, with the company of a few of his closest friends, he sought this land. He followed what he knew about coastal currents and bird and animal migrations, keeping a keen eye on the North Star at night and the sun's position during the daytime. When he finally arrived, he scouted the land he saw for the best place to dock. Most of the land was covered with ice, but he did find some promise. He determined that the fjords along the southwest coast seemed to provide the most accessible route to the land. These fjords would lead to the land which became known as the Eastern Settlement. Its coast teemed with luscious vegetation and plentiful fish, reindeer, birds, and game. Eric also scouted another potential locale, positioned a little more northerly, and, as Greenland juts westward as it goes north, this land became known as the Western Settlement. It was also fairly luscious, but endured tougher winters and bore less livable land. Eric and his friends hopped between these settlements for the remainder of his 3-year banishment. Once the banishment came to an end, he returned to Iceland. But he did not return as one coming home. See, Eric had had a rough life in Iceland, and he saw Greenland as a place of opportunity, a place he could start fresh. But it would be no fun to start this thing alone. So Eric returned to Iceland not to settle down, but to seek companions to make a new, great settlement. Now, getting people to leave their comfortable homes in Iceland to go to this icy, austere island to the north may not seem very doable. But Eric did have a few strong arguments up his sleeve. Icelandic colonization had begun around 870 with a contingent of Norsemen, including those living in the Scottish, English, and Irish colonies. By about 930, though, most of the good land was taken and Iceland was actually becoming fairly overcrowded. To help his cause, Eric also used a little false marketing to his advantage. Saying people would be more willing to go to the land if it had an attractive name, he called the icy territory he had found Greenland. And despite his violent streak, Eric was of the character that commands respect, with evident charisma. So he was able to convince many people that might be interested that they had a capable man to lead them into this unknown. Altogether, Eric was able to gather a fair number of families for his venture west. And between 986 and 990 AD, he spearheaded the first European settlement of Greenland. Despite Eric's bravado and sailing abilities, though, the venture to Greenland proved tough. Of the 25 ships that sailed with him, only 14 of them made it to Greenland. But 14 ships still proved plenty enough to colonize the land, and upon arrival, 2 settlements, in the eastern and western locations Eric had discovered during his 3 years in exile, began. While exploring these settlements, the colonizers found habitations and bones, and concluded that people must have lived there before. Those that colonized the western settlement also became involved in northerly Arctic hunts that provided key resources, especially walruses. In their hunts, they actually did encounter people of the late Dorset, early Inuit culture, who who had long since migrated far eastwards from Beringia. Some years after the colonization of Greenland, a man named Bjarni Herjolfsson was traveling through Iceland to meet with his father. He lived in Norway, and meeting his father was a regular summer voyage. But when he arrived at the usual place in Iceland, to his surprise, his father wasn't there. His father, he was told, had joined Eric in the Eastern Settlement. So, he asked around for descriptions of this Greenland place, and immediately sailed west to meet his father. But, much like Gunnbjorn before him, as he sailed west, the stiff northerly winds drove him off course, and he did not reach his intended land. How foreboding! The winds drove him into a thick fog, and after passing through, he found himself by a flat, wooded coast which he knew could not have been Greenland.
"Northward," he said to his crew, "this cannot be our land."
So, northward they pressed, until they found a large, mountainous stretch of glacier and barren rock.
"This also cannot be our land," he said to his crew, "not from any description I have ever heard. We must bear eastward."
And so, for 4 days they continued, until they finally sighted a land more in line with the description. After Bjarni reunited with his father, he spoke of his voyages to many people, and the rumors spread. What were these strange icy lands that Bjarni passed? Those from the Western settlement who went on the walrus hunts also sighted glacial expanses. Were these the lands that Bjarni passed? The intrigue must have been irresistible. Bjarni himself became at once admired as a great discoverer and scorned for his lack of investigation. King Earl himself berated him for not exploring the lands he discovered. Soon, the Greenlanders could no longer resist. Not only was the thought of new lands exciting, but the economic prospects also allured them. You see, they were running short on timber in Greenland, and the thought of the flat, wooded coastline Bjarni passed proved quite attractive. So the Greenlanders had every reason and will to go. All they needed was someone to lead them there. As leader of their settlement, naturally many would turn to Eric the Red. But Eric himself was ambivalent about the whole journey. At first, he was inclined not to go, but after much prodding, some of his friends convinced him into it, saying his luck and foresight would be of the highest use. But when the time came to depart, Eric lived some distance from the boat, so he had to ride his horse to get there. And after traveling on his horse only a little way, he fell off.
"Oi!" he cried. "It is not for me to discover more lands."
And he took this fall as an omen that he was not meant to go. But Eric was probably never meant to lead the voyage anyway. By his own admission, he was too stricken in years. However, he did have 4 children. Leif, Thorvald, Thorstein, and his irascible, haughty daughter Freydis. We'll hear more on her in the next chapter. Thorstein, who was wise and well-liked, was a prominent agitator for the journey to Bjarni's lands. Leif also became one of the strongest proponents of the journey. Now, in addition to epithets like the Red or the Tall, the Norse had a strong tradition of using a last name based on paternity. Technically, it wasn't a last name, but rather a way of introduction. If someone asked you your name, you might say, "Leif, son of Eric," or "Leif Erikson." This Leif, son of Eric the Red, was a large and powerful man of imposing bearing. He was known as a man of sagacity and a very just man in all things. He also harbored every bit of his father's adventurous spirit. By the time the Greenlanders were looking to journey west, already Eric had sailed to Norway. There, he met with King Olaf Tryggvason, whom the story goes, baptized him and his crew into Christianity, which is how Christianity made its way to Greenland, Erikson becoming something of an evangelist to the Greenland heathens. Interestingly, Erik the Red hated this Christianity his son brought home, and held a strong attachment to the Norse gods. But his wife, Thjodhild, took to Christianity so much that she ordered the construction of Greenland's first church. And then, ashamed at his devotion to Thor, she refused intercourse with her heathen husband. So that's awkward. In his travels, Leif also met up with Bjarni himself, and actually bought his ship, which he later returned to Greenland. This is the ship they would use to embark on the Great Journey. Altogether, Leif and Thorstein assembled a crew of 35 men, and soon set westward. Leif took the lead in the journey and tried to follow Bjarni's path in reverse order, starting with a cold glacial land and moving southward to the coveted woodlands. He seems to have reached the land without much difficulty, but he was a skilled navigator after all. Upon reaching the land, he went ashore and saw a grassless area with flat rocks stretching to inland ice mountains. Remarking that it resembled a big slab of rock, he dubbed the place Helluland, or Flat Stone Land. Today we know the land as Baffin Island. Turning south, he found the other land Bjarni spoke about, and once again set ashore. Noting it was flat and covered with forests and white sands, he dubbed the land Markland, or Forest Land. This land was probably along today's Labrador coast, though the climate today has changed significantly. But for some reason, they didn't stay where they were. Maybe, after discovering Bjarni's two lands, they thought that there had to be more out there. After all, Bjarni wasn't much of an explorer. Or maybe they just didn't like the look of Markland. Whatever the case, they set sail once again, now in a northeasterly direction. When they again sighted land, they saw that it was an island, and upon setting foot, remarked the weather to be splendid. They touched the dew upon the grass, and one of the men decided to taste the drops. He had never tasted anything so sweet before. Still, they did not stay here. Perhaps the island was too small. They instead sailed to a certain area between this island and a cape. Here, they found plentiful stores of salmon, larger salmon than they had ever seen. And at this point, winter approached, so they decided to encamp here for the season. And once they decided this and began to explore, they remarked more great qualities about the land. The place seemed so vegetative and temperate that cattle would not need fodder here during the winter. Leif then had his crew install a permanent encampment. Once they finished, he decided they would do some serious exploring. No more of this, everybody look around, what do you think of the place? No, here, he would have his crew go on treks. So Leif split his party into two groups. While one group would explore the vast country, the other would remain on watch at camp. Leif made a pretty good camp counselor, and ensured that none of them would separate from the others in the group, and that they all returned before curfew. This way, he always knew that his crew returned safely to camp. These expeditions continued for many nights, with Leif himself often joining in the exploration party. One night, when an expedition returned, Erik noticed that a man was missing. This man was known as Tyrker the German. Now Tyrker was very close to Leif, having lived with Leif in his own house back in Greenland, and acted something as a foster father to him. So Tyrker's disappearance troubled Leif greatly. "You fools," Leif said to his companions in visible agitation. "I told you to stick together." And Leif set out immediately with a company of 12 to seek out Tyrker. But after they had just barely set out, Tyrker came striding back and greeted them with a smile. In fact, Tyrker seemed in great spirits. "Why come you so late, foster father of mine, and thus separate from all the group?" Leif asked. But in his great excitement, Tyrker spoke only in German, making wide grins and rolling his eyes. As he received only puzzled looks, and none could understand him, he soon came to his senses and addressed them in the northern tongue. "Truly,
I did not go much farther than the others, he said. And yet, I have a novelty to relate. I have found vines, and I have found grapes.
Foster father, is this true? Leif asked.
Of a certainty it is true, the German replied. For I was born where there is no lack of either vines or grapes.
And that is how the place came to be known as Vineland. Next time, we will follow these Norse as they establish a permanent settlement in Vineland, part of modern-day Newfoundland. These Norse will soon discover that they are not alone, but rather are on land with a fierce group of people they would call Skraelings. Next time, we will examine who these Skraelings were and view the dramatic impact that resulted when Europeans first began contact with these Canadians. Thanks for listening.